The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
And in this corner, weighing in with his take on current events, the smarty of the party, the mighty Mike from the right, the heavyweight of debate, the man who's in cahoots with the grassroots, the broadcaster master, Jimmy Sangenberger.
Saturday night is always all right for the Jimmy Sangenberger Show right here on News Talk 710 KNUS. And it is such a pleasure and a privilege to be with you, especially after doing double duty. I guess we're starting double duty now, but earlier I filled in for George Brockler, and I appreciate you being along for the ride today. 5 hours today, that's all I ask. Thank you very much for being again, along for the ride. Had a great conversation with Aurora Mayor Mike Kaufman about his proposed homeless camping ban. Be sure to check out the podcast of that on my page. If you go to 710knus.com, you should be able to access the Omni podcast page for the show for me, which is double posted onto my page from George's podcast page. Also go to his, whichever one you want to. It's your choice. So great to be with you as always. Thanks so much for joining us, being a part of the program. If you want to join into the festivities, please feel free to tweet at me 24/7, 365 at Sang Center. That's Sang with an E, not an A, Center on Twitter. You can also email me via the 710KNUS website at 710KNUS.com, or, well, you go to the Jimmy Sangenberger Show page on there, first of all, or you can log on to my website, JimmySangenberger.com. Remember, there's no A, there's no I, there's no U in Sangenberger. It's all E's all the time. Once you know that, Sangenberger is easy, and you can go to the contact page and email me from there. And finally, my Facebook page, facebook.com/JimmySangenbergerPro, or just search Jimmy Sangenberger Media Personality on Facebook to access the page there. Like it and email me, or you can direct message me on there as well as on Twitter. Great to be with you today. We've got quite a show for you, really focusing in more than anything on education, the state of education in America and in Colorado in particular. At the bottom of the hour, I will be joined by Priscilla Ron, the wonderful new vice chair of the Colorado Republican Party. She is a 27-year veteran public school master teacher. She knows what she's talking about on education. She does a phenomenal job in talking about these issues, let alone what she does as an educator and has done for 27 years. She is still a teacher, by the way. And she has an article that was published in the Ranchland News in Elbert County entitled "School Choice Not Control, the Republican Platform on Education." Coming from a teacher who's been in the trenches of education for so long and is now speaking out very strongly about the failures of our public education system and what we need to do about it, including school choice. As past guest Corey DeAngelis would say, and he's going to speak at the leadership program of the Rockies Retreat June 4th through 5th down in Colorado Springs at the Broadmoor, funding students, not systems. Fund students, not systems. That's the kind of thing that Priscilla's hitting on. We're going to talk with her at the bottom of the hour, a conversation you won't want to miss. And the next hour, critical race theory. You've heard about it, I'm sure. You're hearing about it even more as time goes on. We're all hearing about it more and more. Well, my weekly column in the Denver Gazette is on that exact topic, and especially and particularly the use of the word equity by these school systems and how education is being subordinated to a political agenda centered on equity and critical race theory. But what is critical race theory? How is it playing out in our schools and specifically in Denver public schools and the Douglas County School District? We're going to talk about that with investigative journalist Angela Ramirez, who did a lot of the digging that I ended up using as source material for my column in the Denver Gazette, and concerned Dougco dad, Will Johnson. Great conversation we'll have, I'm sure of it, in the next hour with the two of them together breaking down what's happening in both Denver and Douglas County. Folks, it's bad. I don't mean to sound alarmist. Yeah, I do, actually, mean to sound a little bit alarmist. Maybe it's not in the curriculum as much as it is in the system that they're trying to create, the value system among their teachers and how they approach education. I'll tee that up here in a bit, but that's a conversation you're not going to want to miss. And then we're going to broaden it out with Nikki Neely, who is the president of a new organization, national organization, called Parents Defending Education. And we're going to dive specifically into what the Biden administration is doing as far as critical race theory and pushing that upon public schools, especially with its grant program. Which, by the way, whenever you have a grant from the federal government, like the $1 billion they want to give out to public schools across the country, there are strings attached, and these are very particular strings attached. We're going to dive into that as well with Nikki Neely. So much coming up here on the Jimmy Sangenberger Show. Priscilla Rahm, Angela Ramirez, Will Johnson, and Nikki Neely all joining us here on tonight's Jimmy Sangenberger Show. In a moment, they're trying to cancel Mike Pence. Fortunately, it doesn't look like it's happening, but they are trying to cancel the former Vice President of the United States, Simon & Schuster in particular, are trying to cancel Mike Pence, or at least elements within the company, as we see cancel culture run amok in so many facets, education, as we'll talk about in the next hour, and in publishing companies like Simon & Schuster and elsewhere. We're going to get to that here in just a moment. But first, I want to play a tune. This is a fun one as we get to our bonus bumper of the evening. Joe Cocker, the late, great Joe Cocker, died in 2014. Man, did he have a voice, but he's also known for the way in which he would sing on stage, his hands sort of flailing about. And the story, the true story goes that it wasn't that he was crazy or he was on drugs or anything like that. He was just feeling the music very passionately. And you could see how he's moving. He's feeling it. He's playing, you know, sort of air guitar or playing the keyboard on his, just from his hands and moving around his arms. You can tell how he's moving. And what turned me back on to Joe Cocker, who I've always been impressed by him, one of the great singers of all time and out of the 60s and 70s, especially. But what turned me back on to him over the last week is I got, for the second time, a comparison after my lapdog show at Elevate Bar and Grill in Westminster, which was just fantastic. That's the Lapdogs band that I'm a part of, DAWGS, where I'm the harmonica player. And for the second time last weekend, I got a comparison to Joe Cocker because that's how I'm moving about. It's a different way. I move differently, but there's a lot of similarities there because I'm feeling the music and I don't know what my body's doing. Apparently, it absolutely is something that folks get a real kick out of, that they enjoy watching, or so I'm told. But I got a second comparison to Joe Cocker for that exact reason last night. It was actually, or last Saturday night, it actually came from the founding drummer of the Lapdogs, who's no longer in the band. He's the guy who was like, yeah, you know, he kind of remind me of Joe Cocker. And this tune, Feeling All Right, you're going to recognize it right away. But this one in 1976, Joe Cocker went on SNL and John Belushi did his impression of Cocker that's so spot on, so hilarious. You can find it on YouTube, although good quality video is hard to find, but it's there. And they did it side by side. Absolutely hysterical. So much fun. Joe Cocker, clearly a very good sport about it. But without further ado, I'm feeling all night tonight. I hope you are. Here is a little Joe Cocker doing his tune, Feeling All Right. K N U S, Jimmy Sengenberger. A little bonus bumper fun for you. The great Joe Cocker. And I got to tell you, he really is fun to watch in these old videos on YouTube, especially when he was in the 1960s performing in the 70s. And really seeing how he's moving, I do see the comparison to me when I'm playing harmonica because I am not still at all. I'm moving all about. So I suppose I could see that. And it is entertaining indeed. So good to be with you tonight in the Jimmy Sengenberger Show. And I said it before, teed it up, but I'm going to say it now and emphasizing a little bit about what's going on here. The Wall Street Journal has a very interesting expose inside the Simon & Schuster blowup over its Mike Pence book deal. During an April workplace culture session, one of the many in the past year held by book publisher Simon & Schuster, topics included how to evaluate proposals from Black and LGBTQ plus authors and how best to promote them. Not on the agenda, to the frustration of some gathered on the Zoom call, was the company's recent deal with former Vice President Mike Pence for a memoir of his life in politics and the Trump administration. Publishing the book, some staffers said at the session, would be a betrayal of the company's promises to oppose bigotry and make minority employees feel safe. By not publishing the book, they would make minorities feel safe and show that they're opposing bigotry. Are you kidding me? Let's continue. Wall Street Journal. A petition soon followed, signed by more than 200 staff members, or 14% of the staff, plus about 3,500 outside supporters, including Simon & Schuster authors. It demanded that the company scrap the Pence memoir. Scrap it. Part of a two-book deal, and refrain from making any deals with members of the Trump administration. In other words, folks, the folks at Simon & Schuster... 14% of them, and writers at Simon & Schuster, other authors, wanted to cancel the former vice president of the United States. And here's why. It said Mr. Pence advocated for policies that were racist, sexist, and discriminatory, and that publishing the book would be legitimizing bigotry. Now, this is an encouraging piece. That's when Jonathan Karp, the book publisher's chief executive, pushed back. Mr. Karp knew he could face dissatisfaction from the staff over the company's interest in publishing conservative and Republican authors. He had already taken a public stand against one, a book by Missouri Republican Senator Josh Hawley. But he decided the Pence contract would stand. He turned down the petition. In an interview, Mr. Karp said he respects that some employees have a moral obligation to the memoir deal, but that the company is committed to publishing a broad range of views. We don't want to be a niche publisher, he said. The former vice president who got 74 million votes is representative of a broad range of people. He said Mr. Pence's role in one of the most tumultuous periods of U.S. history will make for compelling reading. More broadly, he said, the publisher can treat its employees with respect and also publish authors with views they find anathema. Those two realities don't have to be in conflict, he said. And you know what? Karp is right there. Now, I don't think they should have gotten rid of Josh Hawley's book. But in terms of Vice President Mike Pence's and what he's saying about different ideas, that's important. Does he really want to, for business reasons alone, turn Simon & Schuster, one of the biggest book publishers around, especially in nonfiction books, and turn it into a niche offering that only has a very select group of book authors, that is very narrow in the kinds of perspectives that it allows to be presented in its books? We're talking about the Vice President of the United States. Simply by being associated with President Trump ought to get you canceled from everything. You should have no forum for you to express your views if you were in the administration of Donald Trump, or even if you voted for Donald J. Trump, as most, the vast majority of our audience here did, just as I did. Very proudly so. If you vote for President Trump, if you're in his administration, you're canceled. You're gone, gone, gone. That's the kind of society they want us to live in. Thankfully, Simon & Schuster said, you know what? We're not doing this. And you know what I think, too? They need to get a grip and grow up. This isn't a college campus we're talking about. This is the real world. This is where people at a company should recognize that different views need to be expressed. And it's appropriate for different views to be expressed. College campuses are this idea of a safe space. And unfortunately, that is permeating all aspects of our society now. It is fast growing, this idea that we should have safe spaces all over the place. And it is absurd. Especially that they think that this is the kind of thing that needs to happen in the real world. I want to play a clip here. Later on in the show, next hour, we're going to be talking about critical race theory with several guests, including Angela Ramirez, independent journalist who really focuses on Marxism in American politics and neo-Marxism and Black Lives Matter and so forth, and a dad named Will Johnson in Doug Coast Schools. There's this group called the Gemini Group, LLC. So it's a company. I think it's a husband and wife team. They both have the same last name. Looks like they're at a home and a couch in the video for a Zoom session. They were hired for $36,900 to do trainings, workshops, different professional developments that is all about equity and critical race theory concepts and how that needs to be incorporated into the value system, really be the value. Equity needs to be the value. Keep in mind, equity is all about treating people differently in order to achieve equality of outcome. It's not about equality of opportunity. Let's treat everybody the same. It's let's treat people differently so that we can have equality of outcome. And here is an example. This is from an actual hour-long professional development held on, I think, April 19th, 2020 with the Gemini Group. And they were talking about a macro microaggressions concept, that this idea of microaggressions literally came from college campuses. And now it's being presented as something you need to keep in mind when it comes and take into account when it comes to K through 12 education. Mind you, again, this is a professional development offered to teachers in April. One of a handful that this group, this duo, was given $37,000 for.
Macro microaggressions are just as harmful, right? We're not conducting them on an individual level, but they're all around us in the world we live and walk in, right? In your schools, what's hanging on the walls? What's depicted in your education environments? If I walk in as an immigrant from a country, English is not my first language. Maybe I'm brown, whatever the case is. Do I feel like this is a place that I'm welcomed, that people understand and understand me and have learned about me? Am I walking in feeling like I'm a part of this environment? Or am I feeling again like that other?
That's a sample. Now, I get some of the points here, the overarching premise of let's make all students feel welcome. I agree with that. But here we're using macro microaggressions. It's not just microaggressions, folks. They're now macro microaggressions, like the name of the school mascots, the name of the school themselves, and so forth. That kind of language, that kind of rhetoric is now being used in professional developments for schools coming from college campuses. It's no wonder that there are people coming out of college and presuming that they're going to get their safe spaces enforced in the real world at their jobs. Whatever kind of job they have, when this gobbledygook is being presented and getting paid 5-6 figures in order to present it. Here's one other little sample for you we'll dive into in the next hour from the Gemini Group.
If you let those challenges or those dissenters steer you away or push you back or stop you from doing this, don't even start it in the first place, because it will happen.
And to be able to stand on the fact that now this is a value of the district where you work.
Douglas County Schools. Right?
The school board passed a resolution about equity not that long ago, thanks to folks on this Zoom call. Mm-hmm. It's a value. And so we are responsive to the value of the organization where we work and the expectation that this is how we will inform and educate our children.
Mm.
So you might have a different thinking process, but this is how the school district where your children attend educate your children. This is the value that's important.
This is the value that's important. As I close in my article for the Denver Gazette, my weekly column yesterday, Equity Elbows Out Education in Our Schools is the title. If education is about setting students up for future success, how is it virtuous or fair to force universal mediocrity upon them in pursuit of ideology? And that's what they're doing here. We'll talk about it more in the next hour here on the Jimmy Sangenberger Show. I touched on it earlier on the program this morning. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll talk about school choice with Vice Chair of the Colorado GOP, Priscilla Ron, a 27-year veteran public school master teacher who's written on the importance of school choice. And then we'll dive into our critical race theory and K through 12 education hour. You'll find out what's going on at DPS in Doug Coe schools with Angela Ramirez, reporter, Doug Coe dad, Will Johnson, who's been paying close attention to this, and Nikki Neely of Parents Defending Education. Keep it right here. It's the Jimmy Sangenberger Show. We're just getting started. News Talk 710 KNUS.
Jimmy Sangenberger, News Talk 710 KNUS.
been back, in fact, on the Jimmy Sangenberger Show, News Talk 710 KNUS, to some nice, smooth jazz with tremendous saxophone by the husband of my first guest this evening, Priscilla Ron, vice chair of the Colorado Republican Party. Her husband, Darren Ron, his tune called Vibin'. Priscilla, welcome back to the Jimmy Sangenberger Show.
Hey, Jimmy, I was vibing off of that music for sure.
I knew you'd dig this one.
Absolutely. Great choice.
Darren is so... Oh, it's such a funky tune. I really enjoy it. And, you know, I was thinking, I wonder how it would sound if you had Darren on the sax, me on the harp, and Biff Gore's voice, and we did a little something.
I think that is going to be a fantastic event if we do that, and we should plan on it.
That sounds like it would be such a treat. I would love that. I've never heard sax, or maybe I have, but I don't think I've heard much sax and harmonica together, so that could be pretty darn cool.
I think so. I'm looking forward to it. Let's do it.
I love it. All right. Great ideas sometimes come to Jimmy Sangenberger every once in a while, other than picking phenomenal bumper music. And man, can he play the sax. Again, Priscilla Ron joining us on the Jimmy Sangenberger Show, vice chair of the Colorado Republican Party, and also a 27-year veteran public school master teacher, which is an elite distinction held by less than 1% of Colorado teachers. She has been an educator in urban, suburban, and rural schools as a public school teacher, principal, regional team specialist. The list goes on. So when it comes to education, Priscilla Ron, I think you know a little bit about what you're talking about.
It's been quite a journey and very eclectic, and I've loved every minute of it. So I'm excited to talk about education.
And your current role is and has been for a while as a music educator, which I love. Clearly, we share a passion for music, and your family does with your husband being a saxophone player. So I love that. I think music education is so critical. The reason why I wanted to have you on is you had a tremendous article for the Ranchland News in Elbert County, School Choice Not Control, the Republican Platform on Education. And before we get into the meat and potatoes of it, what inspired you to write this sort of article?
Well, the chair of Elbert County, GOP, reached out to me, Tom Peterson, and he said, I'd really love to get your perspective on school choice, and I can see if I can get it published, and would you write something? And he gave me a couple of days' notice, and I was like, of course, I'm happy to. And so he was the impetus for me to just get it on paper.
I love that, and clearly you're passionate about this as an educator who wants to provide for your students the best quality education you can. You've always done that, and one thing that strikes me about the article is that you're talking about the school system, the government-run school system, not the teachers, and I think that's an important distinction for a lot of the issues that you're addressing.
Right. A lot of what teachers are asked to do comes from the top down. You know, depending on the school district and how it's organized, you either have the superintendent with their vision for schools, and it could be very centrally focused. And then you have some districts like Denver Public Schools where principals have a little bit more autonomy. But at the end of the day, the school boards have a lot of decision-making power for curriculum and vision and policies that take place in our school. So yeah, we kind of do what we're told a lot of times as teachers.
And in terms of the system, it's structured in a way where students are compelled to go to particular schools based on where they live, and it doesn't provide opportunities very easily, at least, for parents to say, you know, you're not getting the kind of education we want for you at this school, so we're going to move you here, especially if you're on the lower income spectrum.
Right. You know, parents move into neighborhoods and buy homes in places where they know the schools are good. They try to buy up and they check out everything, especially the schools, afford to live in more affluent neighborhoods where the public schools tend to have more resources. And so what we find are pockets of neighborhoods where the offerings or the quality of instruction are not equal to other areas of the city. And that's what prompted me in my career to start to take a look at the system as a whole and how are we delivering a high quality, rigorous education to all of our kids. And what we're finding is we simply are not delivering on the promises that we've given to all of our families.
I want to read the Republican platform on education, which you quote in your article, Priscilla Ron. Education is much more than schooling. It is the whole range of activities by which families and communities transmit to a younger generation, not just knowledge and skills, but ethical and behavioral norms and traditions. It is the handing over of a cultural identity. That is why American education has, for the last several decades, been the focus of constant controversy as centralizing forces from outside the family and community have sought to remake education in order to remake America. A lot of that talks about, I think, the national role of the federal government with the Federal Department of Education, despite, as you note, not authorizing the federal government and the Constitution to be involved in education. But what's your takeaway from that passage?
Right. Well, that's the rub. We're such a diverse country. And because the Constitution doesn't talk about the government's role, it's kind of like the Wild West. We've developed this system where we have to educate such a diverse group of children. And now it's even more important because we have multilingual students and special education students and kids with autism. And so When you're trying to create a rigorous system without millions of children, you know, there are going to be kids who fall through the cracks, but it's not an excuse. Because, you know, which parent are you going to tell that their kid's going to be ignored or not going to get what they need? So every parent has an expectation that when they send their children to school, they're going to get equal attention, high quality instruction to their needs. And that means gifted and talented all the way down to the child that is falling behind. So, you know, this is why parent choice and school choice is critical, because it shouldn't matter and it doesn't matter what the name of the building is on the outside or the type of school. What matters is, does your child get what they need for their development and their growth in education?
Again, we're talking with Priscilla Ron, vice chair of the Colorado Republican Party and a 27-year veteran public school master teacher. You point out that when it comes to support for school choice, especially among minority communities, that's been growing, particularly after what we saw with 2020. What did some of the data show about support for more educational opportunities and, as Corey DeAngelis would say, funding students, not systems?
Right. It's well over 80% support in the Black and Hispanic communities. And we're seeing more and more communities of color actually advocating for charter schools, innovation schools. You look at DC, which I mentioned in my article, where over 10,000 students have received scholarships to attend a private or parochial school of their choice, because parents are no longer sitting on the sidelines and saying, well, I guess my child's not going to get what they need. They're taking charge, which is what parents should do. And they're finding the money and they're finding the communities, and they're not going to allow a government-run system to let their child fall through the cracks. And that's why it's so important for parents to speak up at their school board meetings and build relationships with other like-minded parents.
It's about providing more opportunities for students and giving a real level playing field for those who may need a different learning environment. That's how it speaks to me. And now we're hearing a lot of talk about equity, and we'll talk about that more in the next hour. But equity in schools, which is adverse to the idea of equal opportunity. And let's make sure that all students have, as best as we possibly can, an equal chance to grow from tools that are available and the different learning environments and so forth.
Absolutely. And we're looking at the data, because the data doesn't lie. When we see the disparities in the Black and brown communities where they're underperforming, then we have to dig deeper. I say, put your scuba gear on and let's go deeper and let's figure out where the issues are, where the gaps are. You know, a lot of people will say it's funding, or some people will say it's a lack of culturally responsive teaching. It's, you know, there's all of these reasons. And And they're all reasons we need to look at and work together in order to provide these solutions. But I can tell you that we're really distracted in public education right now with all of these different ideas of what we need to indoctrinate our kids with when we have such low performance in mastery of the basics like literacy and math. And so I feel like we need to get back to making sure our kids are prepared to be able to handle freshman level coursework should they decide to go to college.
It is ironic, Priscilla, that we often hear folks on the left in particular discuss inequities and how we need to make inequity and a big focus. And yet, to the extent that we can be talking and have a conversation about what that means and actually legitimize some aspect of it, it's the fault of the system that we have in terms of the structure. As you point out, public education data has shown that the government-run system is not the answer because it has failed to deliver on its promises to our children. Teachers can no longer defend the very system that created and expanded educational disparities and inequities. Explain that from your definitions, too, of how you approach the ideas of disparities and inequities. But also, that's a pretty strong indictment coming from a 27-year teacher.
Well, you know, I think as public school teachers, we believe in the public education system in terms of providing a free education to all kids. Like, that's the one thing that every child in America should have a guarantee of. But when we look at the statistics, we see that we are not delivering on those promises. So it's not right for public school educators to say, well, we don't want kids to go to a charter school or innovation school or a private school if we're not delivering. It's basically holding kids hostage in a situation where that they can't get out of, and they can't educate themselves. It's our job to educate them. And if we're not doing that, then we shouldn't stand in the way and block their ability to get access to a high quality education. So that's why I said we can no longer defend government run systems that don't deliver to our kids. It's time for us to say, you know what? Every child deserves a high quality education. And if we're not delivering it, we're not going to stand in the way for them to find it. And we're going to make sure that we're being competitive enough, because that's what this comes down to. Because, you know, when you lose a student in a public school, that money goes with them to another school. And that's the fear, because if you lose numbers, you lose funding, you lose teachers, you lose programs. And then what ends up happening is that schools get shut down. And so that's the fear. Mm. So we need to take a look at how we're delivering instruction, how we're holding all kids to high expectations and high standards and not lowering our standards, because that's part of the problem that we're seeing in a lot of our minority cities, is that we don't believe that kids can excel. You know, I'm saying this in generalities, right? But what we're seeing is that we give them passes like, oh, you know, this poor black kid or this poor Hispanic kid, you know, we're just going to give them a grade even if they don't turn the work in, or we're going to, you know, lower expectations. It doesn't work.
They're hurting the students in that case. You're hurting those kids.
Absolutely. You're creating a system where they're going to end up failing because they're not able to perform at the same level and same rigor as somebody else. And it doesn't matter the color of the child. We're just talking about having consistent and high expectations for all children, regardless of their race.
Yeah, I think that's so important and so well said, Priscilla Rani. Look at California. They're looking at legislation, considering legislation to make it so that middle school kids can't do advanced math, which is just stunning to me and beyond the pale. They're trying to, rather than create a level playing field of opportunity, they're trying to create a level playing field of mediocrity. And that's not what we should be striving for in our education system.
Right. And we're seeing this even at the college levels, where they're saying to the black students, you know, we're going to either not make you take these exams, or we're going to give you a pass on certain. It's like, that's not the answer. And it's not even about the kids in America competing against each other. We're not going to be able to compete against kids in other countries who have been back at school and who do have high expectations and competitive standards. I believe that iron sharpens iron, and competition is really good. And we see that. And that's why we're seeing such a mad rush right now. It's like the education system is upside down, and we're trying to figure out how we're going to repair this, because we're seeing our rankings decrease in the world, you know, rankings against other countries. And so we really are at a critical fork in the road right now, where we're going to have to figure this out.
Yeah. One thing, in the next hour, we're going to be particularly talking about critical race theory and the way in which equity is being focused on derivative from critical race theory. There are a lot of parents who are concerned about the idea that money may be coming from the federal government or from the taxpayers, you know, local taxpayers through property taxes or what have you, and then allocated towards an ideological agenda, as opposed to making sure that we're really ironing out the needs of kids. And you know that I ran the Liberty Day Institute for 7 years, and I could tell you from experience, and you know this well as an educator yourself, that oftentimes teachers are not given the resources and tools in certain areas. Perhaps it is the arts, like music. They're not giving enough tools and resources to do social studies, you know, history and government and those kinds of things, especially when we're talking elementary school kids. And that's where a lot of parents are like, why isn't money going to this, or so that my teacher doesn't have to ask me for help with, you know, additional supplies in the classroom, or they have to pull from their own pocket as a teacher and what have you. How do you get the priorities back in order for where money that's already in the system for a school district to be aligned where it needs to go in the classroom?
Yeah. So once again, that's a leadership decision.
Yes.
Where we need to make sure that we are finding great candidates for superintendent and electing great school board members. And we are taking a look at our tax structure and our economy. Everything that's been happening, especially during the pandemic, has impacted our ability for businesses to generate tax dollars to give into the education system. So, I mean, there's all of these layers that impact how we get funding into our schools and how they get directly into the classrooms, so that teachers can have the resources that they need in order to help their students achieve. And so it's a very multifaceted issue that I think people need to pay attention to.
Yeah, no, it is. And that's where a lot of parents are like, why is the money going in this direction and so forth? But that's also something we'll dive into more in the next hour. Just a few minutes left with you, Priscilla, Ron. And I really think that when we look at this agenda of, especially of Republican legislators, as you allude to in your article for the Ranchland News and Elbert County, School Choice, Not Control, the Republican platform on education, 2020, I mean, you try to look in the worst of situations, like the COVID pandemic, you try to look for silver linings as best you can to like give you hope for the future. And I think a silver lining is that parents now are waking up to the idea that they should have more capacity to direct their kids' educations and not be relying upon a school district that might just say, sorry, we're going to be closing school indefinitely for now, and you have no other opportunity. You and I talked about this last fall when schools weren't reopening at the time. So what's your take on that and the potential now based on what we saw from parents and students in 2020 with the pandemic?
Yeah, the beautiful thing that came out of this pandemic is an awakening of parents. For the first time, they were forced to have to be a teacher and a technology problem solver. And, you know, like they could see the curriculum and what their children were learning and how they were learning. And they started to take action. And what we're seeing is more and more parents saying, I don't agree with how my child is being taught at their school. And that's what we need. We need parents to be involved and informed and action oriented. And I'm very excited about our school board elections this fall, because I believe we're going to find candidates who really deeply care about our kids and see the problems and are bringing ideas and solutions that are common sense and that are actually going to move the needle. So I'm actually extremely hopeful that we're going to find the right candidates all over the state of Colorado to make a change.
That's fantastic. Very encouraging, especially coming from the vice chair of the Colorado Republican Party. We definitely need to be recruiting candidates all across the board, including in those school board races. You say this as we wrap up here with you, Priscilla, Ron, we cannot afford to lose another generation of children do to under education. I think that is a profoundly important clarion call for every Coloradan.
Absolutely. You know, you lose a year, it'll take two or three to make it up. This year of 2020, how do we get that back? I mean, how are we going to shove the content down them and help them be competitive and prepared? It's going to take these kids years to make up the level of lost education. And we can't be distracted. And parents, I'm imploring parents to speak up and help these school boards refocus their attention and their energy on what we need to do to make sure that our students are learning content and are prepared. Now, we want them to be loving, caring, empathetic, thoughtful people who are tolerant and respectful and treat people with dignity. Absolutely. We can embed those concepts and those character traits every single day in our lessons, but we've got to get back to the basics of teaching, you know, math and literacy and science and history. That's going to be critical for the future of our children. And especially, we've got to be forward thinking about these careers and what our kids are going to be, you know, required to do in another 10, 20 years. And that's the critical place we are right now.
I think this is an exact quote, but James Madison once said, "Knowledge will forever govern ignorance, and a people who mean to be their own governors must arm themselves with the power which knowledge gives," which underscores, in my view, exactly why we have a public education system, a government-run system in the first place. And to your point, we are not meeting that standard that quote from James Madison says. Priscilla Ron, vice chair of the Colorado Republican Party and a 27-year veteran public school master teacher, thanks so much for joining us. Really appreciate your insights and your leadership on this.
As always, great to be on your show, Jimmy.
And I look forward to Biff, Darren, and Jimmy some point.
Absolutely.
All right. Thank you very much. All right. That's it for the first hour of the Jimmy Sengenberger Show. When we come back, we're going to dive into critical race theory and what's happening in our public schools, in Denver Public Schools, Doug Coe, and elsewhere here in Colorado, what you need to be aware of. We will talk with investigative journalist Angela Ramirez, Doug Coe dad, Will Johnson, and Nikki Neely, president of the national organization Parents Defending Education, coming up in an hour you must not miss. 710 KNUS.